This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
I've been waiting for someone to write a book about college athletics and the reform process of it for some time, and finally a book has come out from Professor Ronald A. Smith, and the name of this book is called Pay for Play. He is a professor emeritus of sports history at Penn State University. He has also written other sports books, including Sports and Freedom, The Rise of Big-Time College Athletics, and he joins us on Sports Byline. Ronald, I want to start by saying that I looked at the back end of this book, and I see that the acknowledgments and the notes are more than 100 pages, and that's almost like a small book in itself. How hard was it to write this book?
Well, I don't know how hard it was. Anytime you write, it's hard. Writing is hard work, but I started researching a long, long time ago in the 1960s when I was working on my PhD at the University of Wisconsin. So I've been at it for a long time, and it's hard work, and all the stuff I put in the back of the book basically was to indicate that I've read a lot of stuff, and what I've tried to put in there is accurate material.
I looked through the book, and it immediately became clear to me that if you read this book, unless you were an expert in it, it is very, very confusing, because there are a lot of forces that are in play when it comes to college athletics and efforts to reform them. Am I correct in that observation?
You're absolutely correct, because it's never quite clear who is in control of college athletics, as you might guess. Is it the alumni? At one time, it was 100% students who were in control. Is it the faculty? No, they don't have much control over athletics. Is it the athletic directors and conference commissioners? Is it ESPN and the networks that control it? Is it the boards of trustees? Is it the presidents? The presidents think they do, but they don't really. So it's confusing as to who controls athletics.
And it's also interesting to see how it's changed over the years. And this book traces attempts at college athletic reform from 1855 through the early 21st century. Let's have a little bit of a history lesson on college athletics and its process over those years.
Well, first of all, college athletics started completely by student control. And the first sport happened to be rowing. The reason it was rowing is because Oxford and Cambridge in England started out with rowing and cricket. We started out with rowing and baseball. And from that point, with students running it, there were lots of problems. One, they were running into debt eventually, and it was embarrassing the schools. So presidents and boards of trustees came in, and faculty didn't like the fact that students were staying away from school to play sports and traveling hundreds of miles to go to various sports. And so a whole lot of different people came in to control intercollegiate athletics. And so there has been a change. Today, you look at the National Collegiate Athletic Association, it's completely run by presidents, although I must admit conference commissioners have a great deal of say on what goes on in intercollegiate athletics.
When you take a look at that span of time up to today, what are the significant signposts along the way that have affected college athletics, Ronald?
Well, a lot of people would say that it has moved from an amateur spirit to a commercial professional one. I don't quite look at it that way. I think it's been commercial since the very first contest. The very first contest was 1852, a crew contest between Harvard and Yale. And who sponsored it? A railroad. And where was it? At a vacation spot in New Hampshire, Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. And so it's been commercial from the very first. And by the 1860s, we hired our first professional coach. So it was professionalized at a very early time. Yale wanted to beat Harvard and crew, and so hired a professional coach. And, of course, as you know now, we're paying coaches $4 and $5 million a year, and it's going to go up. And it doesn't look like there's going to be any real stopping of that.
You know as well as I do, because of the academic nature of colleges, that they always prefer to refer to the athlete as student athletes. Is that a misnomer?
Well, you can read 200 and some pages of this pay for play, a history of big time college athletic reform, and I have never used the term student athlete. I think it was created to make it look this was done in the 1950s by Walter Byers, the first executive secretary of the NCAA, and he did it in order to create the image that athletes were students. And while many of them are, it was done for political purposes. And one political purpose was so that they wouldn't be taxed as a professional commercial entity, which might be taxable, like the pro leagues. The NFL is taxable. College athletics is not taxable. And so they did it to make it look like athletes were students first. They aren't necessarily students first.
Ronald, it appears to me, and somebody that's been in sports for a long time, if I look over the landscape of college athletics, a couple of significant events probably played into the growth of college athletics. One would probably be the scholarships that are given athletes to play the sport at the universities and the colleges. The other would be, of course, the injection of television. Is there anything else, and would you address those two as far as the importance in the growth of college athletics?
Well, both of them are very interesting things. Scholarships were absolutely anathema. People hated people that wanted athletics to be part of the educational system, absolutely hated, quote, athletic scholarships. Paying a player to go to school so that he could participate in sports. On the other hand, schools, especially in the Southeastern Conference, started giving out athletic scholarships in the 1930s. Previous to that, they were giving them under the table. Ivy League schools were doing that. The Big Ten was doing that. SEC was doing that. And they started Southeast Conference started giving out scholarships in the 1930s, and this unleveled the playing field. Therefore, they were recruiting in the North, paying them to come down to the South to play, and especially the Big Ten was upset that they were losing players to Southern schools. So they had to do things. First, they did it under the table, and secondly, by the 1950s, the Big Ten started giving out athletic scholarships to level the playing field so that they could get their fair share of really good athletes. The TV thing, even though most people don't know that the first televised college sport was in the 1930s, 1939, it wasn't until after World War II that it really became important. And by the 1950s, it was very important. And so the NCAA took over control of especially college football, and that was when the time when there was one game of the week, and it was a monopoly, and eventually it was broken up in the 1980s by the Supreme Court. So television, athletic scholarships, extremely important. Television has commercialized intercollegiate sports to the umpth degree, and that's why we have very large salaries for coaches in the two sports that make money, men's basketball and football. Interestingly, women's basketball, which is the most important women's sport, loses money in every campus except maybe a couple.
Are there any other things along the way besides the scholarships and also television that has been important in the development of college athletics in your mind?
Oh, I think the rivalry between schools. It's interesting that in America, we do not have, historically anyway, we do not have very much federal government control over what colleges were formed and how much money they would get, unlike European institutions and those in the British Isles where the government has supported those schools. Our schools in America are basically independent. They're always trying to, one, be survival institutions, and secondly, once they've survived, they want to be at the top of the heap. Football and basketball, and especially football, has advertised the institution free, and that's one of the reasons why presidents and governing boards and alumni and hanger-oners love college sport. They want the free advertising that comes to develop that institution. I happened to be at Penn State, and we would never think of doing away with big-time football because it brings such great advertising to the institution. Now, some of the reformers don't think it's good advertising, but almost everybody within the institution that's in an administrative position thinks it advertises the institution, and it's free advertising.
Ronald A. Smith is with us. He is a professor emeritus of sports history at Penn State University, and we're talking about a very important book that I hope everybody will check out. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It's called Pay for Play, A History of Big-Time College Athletic Reform. You heard him talk about the NCAA. We're going to explain the NCAA a little bit further and how it plays into all of this as we continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.